Well, we're back at Wildfire. My name's Marjorie David. I'm one of the executive producers. I'm the head writer, and I wrote this episode, as well as the one that left you hanging about who would win the great race between Avatar and Wildfire. So now they're coming into the stretch, and as you can see, it's very close. The black horse is Avatar, and he's running behind Wildfire. And in this one shot, you can see our whole family, all of the Ritters and all of the Davises, except for the Davis kids, rooting for their person. Now, if you don't remember, if you'd like to know how these things are done, it's kind of interesting. We get footage from various racetracks of races where horses look like our horses. Like our Wildfire is a bay horse, and Avatar is a black. And we cut that in with real footage of our actors sitting on these sort of amazing fake horses that bounce up and down as they run. They have a very nasty name for these horses, but anyway, they're pretty good looking actually and seem real. And I think you can see that Chris is in the orange and Tina is in the black and orange, and that's stock footage again. And Avatar is winning. Bad luck for Chris. But if you noticed, what happened was that Chris was thrown by something that Tina said, and that's key to the fact that she lost the race. And you'll see as you watch this year how Chris brings herself to become a superior jockey, how she resists responses like that, or maybe the right thing to do is to respond. So now here we are in the title sequence with the song no one can remember the words to. Maybe you notice that Jean's hair color has changed. I think she looks great. Well, this is after the race. Really beautiful shots of Santa Anita. And we actually film at a racetrack in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You might remember that there was a very nasty double play in which Tina was supposed to ride Wildfire. So Chris got to ride Wildfire because Tina backed out. On the other hand, Tina betrayed everyone by riding Avatar. I actually left the speech. This was a good speech because it was a real explanation of Pablo's idea of riding. It's an instinctive and emotional activity that also goes along with horsemanship. And I think in later episodes we'll learn that there are other ways that people treat horses and other ways that people ride. Haha, here's Danny. She's DVR'd the race. You might remember that when we left Danny, she was just drinking herself silly, watching the race. What we're going to find out now is that Tina's just there for the check, and so she's caused terrible trouble for both of our families that we love, and now off she goes. And you also might remember that she played havoc with Matt, but he's getting over it now. It might be interesting to you how we shoot these things. they're shot in different sections, not in order. And this was supposed to be the back part of the racetrack, but in fact, we had to go someplace else that day. It's all on a schedule, and it's all set up to match. And so there are people working all the time to match the costumes and, you know, even the way your hair is, you know, fluffing out of place. So all these scenes seem to connect in a fluid way, but we have a wonderful crew that spends all its time making sure that things match, that people remember what they said the last time, and that they're in the right place with the right feelings. And our actors, of course, are wonderful. And you might notice here the jeans triangle is working out too, because there wasn't much of it in the previously on Wildfire, but Charlie here actually gave Matt's father, Pete, the money to pay his gambling debts. But Charlie is a great guy, and so he never would tell that he gave the money. Now Chris is coming out of the jockey's dressing room. In real life, that's a really interesting thing, because the men and women share jockey dressing rooms in real life, and the women have a little section off to the side. And so she doesn't really look much like a jockey when she comes out of there. I think they're incredibly cute together. But are they just meant to be friends forever? I don't know. We'll find out. As you may recall, Junior left home and nobody yet knows where he is. And Danny, who's hanging around the house instead of going to a very important party, is preoccupied with a kind of after drinks munchies. Ugh. The line, "This pie is incoherent," might be one of my favorite things I ever wrote. It's actually true. And I have to say, Nicole is so great. There's just not a minute when she slips out of her Danny-ness. As you may recall, Danny and Junior do not have the same mother. And even after searching and searching and searching, Danny came up sort of with the wrong mother and brought back Isabel, who is not the nicest person in the world. So she's the first one to realize that Junior's gone away, and Junior's waiting for a bus. And I think cut out of the scene, oh, here comes Molly Blitzer, the blabbermouth. But one of the things that I think was cut out of the scene is that Junior's sitting on a bench waiting for a bus that doesn't stop there anymore, because he knows nothing about the bus system in his local town. As you can see, he is not Molly's biggest fan. The Blitzer family was sort of made to be the most oblivious family in the United States of America. You may notice that Molly's brother, I keep saying you may notice, her brother is Sheriff Blitzer, who's also kind of a dope. Here's the reporter who's been reporting on the Ritter family on, and she's always thought that Pablo is cute, and Pablo thinks that she's cute too. So I think in this story we're beginning to move Pablo along from being only a horse whisperer to someone who has a personal life and feelings and gets to know other people, and this is the start of it, even though it's just a little cute plot. We do these big party scenes at, I think this was done in the same place as this is the country club, and it's the same actual location as the Davis House. And the Davis House belongs to some lovely people whose name is Caruso, and who actually let us come in there and use their house all the time. It's a gorgeous house. It's perfect Davis. And the idea here is that they're in a pavilion a little bit of a distance away from the main house. Davis is a character who has a lot of internal contradictions. He really is not a nice guy or a particularly good father, but he has a lot of feelings that have been hidden deep down for a long time. They're talking now about a new character, Carrie Connolly, and that's Kieran Hutchinson, who in real life is married to Nicole Tubiola, who is Danny. But he's going to be very important this year. He's a sports agent, and he sees all the possibilities in Chris. And they're just starting to get to know each other here, so this is his first introduction. And he's given the sort of agent rap, you're wonderful, you're fantastic. But Chris is still worrying about somebody else. Everything in these scenes is thought through pretty clearly, even down to the dress that Chris is wearing. There was another choice that was a little more low-cut and a little more daring. And talking with Jen and talking with a costumer, Barcy, we decided that what we needed was something that was a little less plungy and exciting, because she's not in the best mood in the world. She did well in the race, but she didn't win. And that's something that sticks with somebody like Chris, who thinks that winning is important. And she's not wrong. Kind of hard to resist this guy. Just so you know, Jen and Nicole are very good friends. Yeah, nobody, Danny is not in a good mood. You can see that the director, Rob Thompson, covered it so that we see everyone's reaction to what Danny tells her father. So if you're watching it as a film, you can see how it's cut, and it was very well cut, to be, you know, to land on everyone at important times and to tell us what they all are thinking. See, we get to follow all of our characters in the same place in a situation like this. And now there's the other piece of our triangle, one that we'll follow up this year, which includes Danny and Matt. And as fans from last year will know, Danny and Matt are a long-time on-again, off-again relationship. And Danny, no matter who she is, no matter how ambitious, she still thinks that she and Matt are destined to be together forever. This is a time when Danny's completely got something to say, and every reason to say it. She did a great job on the scene, and everyone did. This was a nice move, because establishing space in a situation like this is interesting. You notice that they're very close together, and so we're really moving from one conversation to the other and one subject to another. Just as Danny and her father, or just as Mr. Davis realizes that Junior is MIA, Chris and Matt decide to go look for him. And now we see this very cute couple get together. And by the time we come back to the porch, Jean is talking to Danny, who really needs... She's sobering up now, and she's a little more sane about what happened. And now we also learn something important, which is that the Ritter and Davis families have been close for years. They were rivals and friends. And at one point, Davis almost got married to Jean. That was back in the beginning, in pilot days. This is also an opening of a friendship between Jean and Danny, which we don't see that much of until we get almost to the end of the next season, but it turns out to be important, and important for Chris. Matt is such a good egg. He was kind of helping Chris by this. But he's learning for the first time that Chris and Junior broke up. He'd been in a big fight with Junior before this, too, although all the scarring on his face is from the famous Bobby the Bookie. And Bobby the Bookie is a bad guy, but don't worry, we'll be seeing him again next year, too, this year. I think the purpose of this episode was to really bring us back into the emotional center of our characters. We ended a big action portion with a lot of mystery, and we threw them all out into the wilderness to figure out what to do with themselves, and now we're beginning to find out what those things are, and so the choices that they make by the end of this episode are going to determine a lot of what happens in the rest of this year. There's a real sweetness between these two when they're together. It's just a wonderful thing. This is Ray. Last year, Ray employed Chris for a very short time in this diner and had to let her go because she seemed to be the locus of a lot of trouble, even though she didn't start any of it. But in these towns, there's only like one place to go, so they're all back in Ray's diner talking to Ray. Let's just let this do itself. Oh. There are some very funny joke outtakes of the scene, I have to tell you. Don't talk to him, he's okay. All these exteriors of the Davis house aren't the same as where we shoot the inside of the Davis house. The exteriors are a big, beautiful winery and vineyard in outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. But this, we're back at the Ritter Ranch. And we're cutting between what goes on when Junior sneaks into the house and Davis confronts Danny. Now notice that Junior leaves his cell phone behind so that nobody can reach it later on. And this is a kind of nice camera move where we're moving between the two halves of the scene. I always wonder why your parents keep saying these irrational things over and over again. We'll find out. This is the question everyone's been asking since last year. Didn't he ever have a girlfriend? So what if she works in a stable? She's a nice girl. Ah. But this strikes closer to home to Davis than anybody thought. This is one of those arguments where both people are right. And it's an interesting performance on James Reed's part. He's Mr. Davis, because he knows the important secret to being something of a bad guy, and that is that you never think of yourself as a bad guy. Other people may think there's something wrong, but you don't, and in his mind, he's completely right. So the brother and sister are left alone. This is a time when we really see the bonding between the two of them and how close they actually are. In a funny way, they're like two waifs who have been left alone in this big giant house for years, and as much as they squabble and don't get along, they're very close to each other. But that'll bring more trouble to them later. The up and the down of it is part of the fun of the show, I think. And there's something about them that really seems like a brother and sister. They're very close in a very warm way. I love Ryan for this. He loved that line, and he's just really able to say anything and do anything. I think he just gets better and better all the time. He's terrific, and he's so adorable. They're still on the hunt for Junior, which of course always brings you back for a Coke and a piece of pie. Part of doing this episode, in a way, I wanted to bring in everybody who we'd gotten to know last year. And here's Sheriff Blitzer, the other half of the crazy Blitzer family. And here's the miracle of precision German engineering. Or German precision engineering, he said it better than I did. And yes, he does get to drive the Porsche all by himself. Last year, there was a pretty wild party where Molly Blitzer lost control. We saw that in the recap from last year. Nobody knows what to do about Britney Spears. Poor Blitzer. Now, here's an interesting shooting fact. This was shot outside, as it should be. But soon we'll see them in the car, and I'll tell you where they really are when they're there. Not outside. We're on stage shooting this, and the lights flashing in and out are something called poor man's process. They're basically against a black background, and it really looks like they're on the road, and the car is a car without wheels. It's actually Matt's truck, a version of it without wheels, and it bounces up and down on a machine that makes it look as if they're driving. I remember that they were really starving when we shot this scene, and they should have gotten something to eat at Ray's. They do this really great. I hope you're all as in love with these guys as I am, because I just think they're the best. This is a rapprochement between the two of them. They really are going to be friends again now. And that's an important fact for the rest of the year. And Matt is like a good egg. No matter what he does wrong, whether it's sleeping with Tina Sharp or getting in a fight with a bookie, he's a very decent person, and that always shows. And here comes Junior, whose brain is not always at the forefront of his decision-making process. Going down bad streets. And yes, he drives the car, but he didn't do that. And it wasn't Junior's Porsche. You know, it was just a hull of an old Porsche that we got to dump into the water. One of our writers, Sandy Isaacs, who really loves cars, was very upset by that poor shot and said, "You didn't really put it in there." And he knows that we didn't, but he felt that that was a very disturbing shot. Now Jean has come back. As you know, she spent the night with Charlie, her boyfriend, who gets more important as the story goes on, too. But nobody's home. Every single time you see her knock on the door, open the door, up, here they are. It's a separate shot. So that means everything has to be reset. The lights, the camera, the actors, the place it's being shot from. Every single little sequence in this is made up of many, many, many shots that are reassembled during editing. So it goes from script to shooting through the camera and all of those choices, and then it goes into the editing room and there are further choices to make. There are parts of these speeches that are cut out and moved, and miraculously, it all makes sense. This sequence is the best thing. I want to say that all these things we work on together. I go down to Albuquerque, whatever the script is, and then I think I go through pretty much every scene with every actor. Before we shoot anything, we have a table reading. The director's there, and I'm there, and all the actors who can be there are there. And we go through everything. And some people are extremely precise about what they say, and these two really are. They really think about their characters. They really think about what they would do. And we talk about it for a long time, so it becomes a pretty amazing emotional experience for all of us. They went through a lot in the scene. They thought about how to do it. They weren't sure whether it was just a flat-out exposition or what it was. And when they got into it, and when they began to really believe what they were talking about, that was great. I mean, that was like a complete... We did it another way where he didn't slam it down and scare her like that. But it's perfect. That's how you get someone's attention. And she wasn't paying attention. But now the story's real to her. What we were going for here was the whole idea that the story is outrageous and it displays stupidity and unkindness on his part, and it exposes Danny's vulnerability and says how much she felt that she was just left. She says she didn't want me. But it also says that her father did want her, the father who's ignored her all this time. And so it just puts them through the mill. And it's somewhere along the line, it's going to reflect things that are really real. Even if the idea or the plot seems a little far out or preposterous, we always come back to real emotions as much as we can. And that's why we get so much from the actors, and because they care so much about what they're doing. And this is the turn that's really important, because Danny always sees the big picture. See, you can't really batter down somebody's defenses in 1 minute. And, well, he shouldn't, because there's a lot of stuff. It was a real pleasure creating Danny, because she's tough and she's capable of being mean and she's just like her dad, and yet she really is vulnerable. And now, you know, here's the perfect boyfriend. That's a key question. You'd think it was the dad at the door, but it's not. It's that handsome Carrie, the agent. Here's a cat and mouse between them that we talked about quite a bit, too. And Carrie wants something from Jean, and Jean is smart enough to know when somebody wants something from her. I think there was a version of this where I made her more innocent and more, you know, sort of excited about the idea of Chris getting an agent and doing all these things. And I think Nana pointed out herself that this is someone who's run this ranch for years, who went to business school, who's been around, and who knows what those kind of people are. Also, if she's been in the racing world, she really knows. And so they basically have a negotiation here about Chris. And it comes to a conclusion that's satisfactory for both of them. There's a little scene cut out here where she talks to Charlie about this. I wonder if there's ever going to be a compilation of all the little precious moments that we cut out. But, you know, it works fine just how it is because we go from one negotiation to another. And this is the moment where we see that Danny and Davis are very much alike. And you can also see, watching him, how extremely pleased he is by her strength of character. That was very nicely done. And you can see their breath, it's beginning to get cold. You'll see as you go through all the episodes that it starts to get colder and colder out. And you know, Northern California can get pretty cold. And so does New Mexico. But it's still beautiful and it's the fall. And if you notice the colors changing in the background, it's just the scenery, everything is just really beautiful. This is the beginning of a hard time for her because what did happen to Junior? We haven't seen him for a long time. They really think Junior got lost in the drink there. Even Blitzer is sorry. He doesn't like Junior, but... This is a thing that's important to Chris's character because even though Matt and Danny go into the house, Chris has to be alone. And you might know that we haven't seen Wildfire too much in this episode. After the race, he kind of is resting. We want to find out what happened to all the people because we already found out what happened to him. And Chris goes to the place she needs to go the most, which is to be with Wildfire. This is the greatest horse in the world. His name is Finder. And he actually was, I think we've said it before on different commentaries, but he was, look at him, give your kids. He was a double for Seabiscuit in Seabiscuit, and he's just superb. Everything. He's really doing everything that it looks like he's doing. You can look in his eyes. He's just such an intelligent thing. Uh-oh. Junior doesn't know that everybody thinks that he's dead. Imagine how See, that's the crisp response. It makes perfect sense. I think they're really good in the scene because he can't be sucked in by the idea that he's dead. He's not. And yet, Chris is completely responsive and she doesn't know whether to laugh or cry. And she's given away the fact that she still loves him. So there's going to be a lot more push-pull before this thing is done. You should watch Chris's face as he's telling this story. Everybody has a different response to the story he's telling. And it all comes from whatever it is that they need to know. Danny, of course, is skeptical because of the financial situation. Matt isn't quite sure whether this is a real thing or not, but Chris is really listening to the subtext of what he's saying. He's alone, he's gonna start paying for things with credit cards. Doesn't sound too good. And the idea for Junior, he suddenly says, is to start over without anything the same as before. And she hears that. And she's got to be wondering, why do I keep going back to this guy? I left him because he wasn't independent enough in the first place, and it's all about money, money, money. Chris is a little bossy, though, you know. Why are you doing it like this? Why are you doing it like that? But there's a lot of leftovers when somebody scares you that much. It's almost like they're fighting because they can't do anything else. In a lot of ways, this is true. But what they learn as time goes on is that you can start over a million times, but you can't make the past disappear. And that's been kind of a theme of the show, even since the beginning. There's one lost and found, which is really the whole end of it is nobody can take the past away from you. But unfortunately, nobody can make the past go away either when you don't want it. So finally, he does walk away. But it's never over exactly. And this is another portent of the future. It's Carrie. So where is Chris going to go from here? She's just wanted to be on a farm. She wanted to be a jockey, but she doesn't know what it means. And he's going to tell her. See, this is the encroachment of the commercial world on the idyllic world of the Ritter Ranch. And the question is whether it's entirely bad or not, or whether it's actually good. It's a very attractive spokesperson. That's a big promise for Chris. Nobody ever opened up a world where she was safe and secure before. And she doesn't know whether it's a lot of hooey or not. And there we go. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.